The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Plant on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Welcome to Talking Health, and yes, I am your host, Lisa Platt, and today we are going to have a show based on safety and patient experience at Mercy, and today we have Melissa Bergstrand of Risk Management, and she's our risk manager, and Bob Dunas, who is the Service Excellence Coordinator at Mercy. So I want to thank you both for being here today.
Thank you, Lisa.
I'm assuming, Melissa, this is your first time on the show?
Yes, it is.
All right, terrific. And Mr. Dunas, your first time?
Just Bob.
Call me Bob. Mr. Bob, first time on the show?
No, I've been on before.
Okay.
It's been a while, but yeah.
Okay, well, we won't waste our time on you right now. We'll talk to Melissa a little bit. So, Melissa, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to Roseburg and came to Mercy.
Well, I moved here with my family when I was only about 9 months old. My dad was a police officer for the LA Police Department and decided to move his family somewhere safe. So we came to Roseburg. And then I grew up here. I attended the Roseburg schools here. I graduated from Roseburg High School and then went on to UCC, where I received my nursing degree.
Terrific. And how did you land up at Mercy?
I landed up at Mercy in about 1996 after doing some work in long-term care, transitioned into ICU, and worked at Mercy for over 24 years before I transitioned into risk management.
Terrific. So you are a registered nurse?
Yes.
Terrific. Well, Bob, I guess, Mr. Bob, I guess
I won't.
Mr. Bob, I guess I will let you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
How you got to Roseburg and how you transitioned over to Mercy Medical Center.
All right. Well, yeah, it was a pretty circuitous route. I'm actually from the Wright Coast, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. And my wife is an Oregonian and from this area. She went to Columbia to get her master's, and so while she was in New York, we met, and that's how I ended up out here. And because Oregon is not on the New York's radar screen, but she came into my life, and we lived in New York for a couple of years, but really had wanted to live here in Oregon where her family is. So lived in Portland for a couple, and then moved down to the Roseburg area. And before I came to Mercy, I was working for the local Native American tribe, the Cow Creek tribe. And I was the manager of their health education department. So really took the skill set of coaching and change, behavior management and change, to the organizational level at Mercy.
Terrific. Well, welcome to both of you. Since Bob traveled over to the old Brook Communications site and not here, so it has been a while since you've been on the show, Bob. So, guys, let's talk a little bit about your role and what that means. And I'm going to start with you, Melissa. Tell us what a RN risk manager does with risk management at Mercy.
Well, I do twofold of things. I look at employee safety and I look at patient safety and evaluate what things we need to change to keep both our employees and our patients safe.
Terrific. Mr. Bob?
So, patient experience is my focus. And when you think about healthcare, patient experience is the one thing that happens 100% of the time. Every patient has an experience. And so we'll talk a little bit more about what that means exactly. But the goal is to make it an excellent experience. And so that covers a wide range of areas.
Okay, great. So, Melissa, your role as the patient safety guru at Mercy, kind of give us what that really means. What are we trying to accomplish?
Well, keeping the patients safe, but implementing measures that are able to do that and making sure that they're working. Some of the things that we have available to keep our patients safe is bed alarms for patients who get up without assistance that need to have assistance. We have tab alarms for when they're sitting up in chairs. We have the scanning of their wristbands when they're getting medication to make sure we're giving the right patient the right medication at the right time. We also have safety tools to transfer our patients safe, where the staff and the patient doesn't get injured when they're getting transferred from a bed to a chair or a bed to a gurney, and making sure that our staff are using them correctly to keep everyone safe.
And then I know we do some training with the staff, too, to keep them, you know, informed and of any new techniques that come along, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we have an initiative at Mercy called Safety First, and I'd like for you to share what Safety First means throughout Douglas County or the 88,000 listeners, maybe across the nation.
Well, Safety First is a nationwide initiative aimed at incorporating high reliability methods into all of our quality and safety programs and structures so that we can keep our patients and staff safe. A lot of companies use some kind of a safety program, but it's usually only focused on their employees. We have the added feature of patients, so we have it twofold, where we're trying to keep our staff and our patients safe. So all of our new employees go through a safety first training within the first 90 days and are given the safety tools to use to help make it a safe environment for everyone.
So do we have what we call a safety first coach?
Yes. Safety first coaches are members on the floor or that have some experience of being with Mercy for a period of time, or are the experts at safety who help others be attentive to when they're not following those measures they're supposed to be, and coaching them through to remember how to use those safety tools. A simple example is like when a staff member walks out of a room without washing their hands. If that safety coach is there, they'll kind of signal to them or make some kind of a reminder, say, hey, remember to wash your hands, or give them the hand signal to wash their hands to remind them to be successful and to keep our patients safe and them safe.
Great. And Bob, it related to the patient experience, I presume that the safety of our patient plays into your role as the service excellence coordinator.
Absolutely. And that's a good takeoff point, because a lot of times when you think about patient experience, you hear the term patient satisfaction used. And I really want to make it clear that although we're really interested in satisfaction and we want everybody to have a satisfaction experience, patient experience is much bigger than just warm and fuzzy. Did you have a warm blanket? Was the pillow good? Those kind of things. So when you look at patient experience, it's the quality of the interactions the patients have with the doctors, the nurses, all the staff at the hospital. From when you enter the emergency room to if you're admitted, even to when you're discharged. So for example, we ask a question, did the doctor do a good job and the nurse of explaining your medications, why you're taking them, and what side effects to watch out for when you go home? So if we do a good job of that, a yes or no answer gives us insights into how does that interaction improve patient care so that you decrease, for example, readmissions after a person goes home, or them having to come back because they had a adverse side effect that they weren't made aware to watch out for. So it's definitely about safety. If you don't have a, if you have a safety issue, you have a poor outcome with safety, that's not a very good experience.
Great. So Melissa, capitalizing on what Bob just said, we're not just focused at what happens in the hospital, but when they get discharged. So the family member plays a role in this. So what kind of information do we provide to the caregiver or the family member once they're discharged?
In their discharge instructions, it usually contains their follow-up appointments. It has the medications that they're being discharged with. If it's a new medication that they've never taken before, there's usually a medication insert in there describing that medication and what it is for. We also do, like with home health, if there have some home health arrangements that need to be made, our discharge planners help with that, getting home health set up for them. And just making sure that everything's taken care of. And all the units usually tell patients and families that if they have any questions after being discharged, to feel comfortable to call and get those questions answered after they've been home.
Okay. me ask this. What are some of your goals surrounding patient safety? And your thoughts on it. Doesn't have to be some verbatim. It can be, hey, this is Utopia. Melissa, we're giving it to you today. You get to develop it all.
Well, right now I'm responsible for the Fall Committee and Safe Patient Handling Committee. In that committee, we look at the types of falls that happen, when they happen, what we could do to prevent those falls from happening, what we need to do for the staff to give them the education and the devices to keep the patient safe, what we need to do for the patients and families for them to understand why it's important that patients not fall. And to use their call lights, or why we use the devices we do, like the bed alarms, to keep them safe. And then the Safe Patient Handling Committee, we focus on the proper way of handling a patient so the staff and the patient don't get injured. Instead of just pulling someone up off the floor, we have devices, like it's called a hover jack, that we can put underneath the patient and lift them to the height of a bed or a gurney so they don't get tugged and pulled on. The old days, you just reached down and you pulled someone up and shoulders and arms hurt, your back hurts. This way the patient's more comfortable, the staff are safer at moving the patient, and everybody's happier.
So, Bob, I'm trying to kind of weave in a patient experience. I mean, when you're out talking with family members and you're talking with patients, I mean, I'm sure they have some top questions that they want to ask about the safety of their loved one at the hospital.
Well, when you're talking about questions from family members, loved ones, I think it's really important that, and we try to strive to make this clear, that it is okay to ask questions. It is okay to advocate for your family member. Speak up. We invite you to participate in your care. We really want to make it collaborative, and not healthcare is not something we do to you. It's something that we do together. And that improves communication. It lowers anxiety. It builds trust. So you have just a really good functional partnership with people.
So how does our advisory, your advisor, your patient advisory council play into this?
So we have a patient family advisory council, which is made up of community members, and they've had experiences with us as patients. They've been the relatives of people who've had experiences. Most of those have been good, but at the same time, some where we've drop the ball in different areas, and we invite people to share those experiences because we can learn a lot from them. And so that's why we have the council. They're willing to meet with us and share the experiences so we can take those apart, dive down and see where we can make improvements. And then they're also involved in looking at everything we do, from marketing materials, brochures, flyers that we put out, to signage, and lots of different ways that they can see things from a patient's eyes that we who live there on a daily basis and see things, we would miss.
So I assume you and Melissa work pretty close together then?
I think it's growing in that direction.
Great.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming something that I think people are getting it. Even Melissa, who's pretty new to her role, are understanding that safety and patient experience, like I said before, it's not just patient satisfaction. It's really about improved outcomes, and that's definitely safety. So, for example, we do a process called...
Yeah, Bob, great. We'll come back. We have to take a short break, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talking Health on Local Talk at 4, brought to you by CHI Mercy Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, they sprung that break short on me. So, but we're back with Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Hey, next week, if you're joining us, we are going to focus on nutrition and physical therapy. So come join us next Monday. But today we are talking with Melissa Bergstrand and Bob Dunas from CHI Mercy Health. Melissa is the risk manager for risk management, and then Bob is the service excellence coordinator for the patient experience. So, Bob, we were talking about what the Patient and Family Advisory Council does, and I had to cut you off because we were going to break, but I want to pick it up and let you share your thoughts.
Okay. Well, it was about how they're involved in looking at everything we do from a patient perspective, because one thing we find is most of the people, of course, are health professionals and have been working at the hospital for some time, and you can just kind of lose touch with what it's like to be the patient, be the person in the bed, how they see things, because their perspective is really a different point of view. And so we use the Patient Family Advisory Council to say, how does this look to you? How does this process look? How does this brochure look? Does it make sense, or are we using words that maybe are too medicalese, and we need to change that so that it's clearly understandable to patients and family members? So I think the other thing I was about to mention, though, was one of our process, for example, about patient experience tying into safety. We do something called intentional hourly rounding. That is definitely a foundational nursing practice. And what it means is that every hour during the day and every 2 hours at night, either the nurse or the CNA or both of them are going to be in your room, and they're going to go through a very detailed process of checking on how you're doing with pain. How are we managing that? Do you need help going to the bathroom? Do you have everything you need within reach? And are you comfortable? Do we need to reposition you? And we'll ask that every time we come in. The point being, if we do that job consistently and we do it effectively, it is found to decrease falls, among other things. But if somebody falls, breaks a hip, breaks a wrist, that is not a very good patient experience. So we're looking to improve safety, improve the outcome. And so before you leave the room, you do the hourly rounding. Before you leave, you always check and say to yourself, is the patient safe? Am I leaving them in a safe position? And they're good to go. So imagine just everybody doing that all the time, every patient, every time. You're going to have a better experience, better outcomes.
And Melissa, coming from a former ICU nurse and now into more of a management role with, patient falls and safety, et cetera, how do you see it from this new role versus how you saw it when you were an RN?
Well, I saw it the same way when I was a nurse, too, because I've always loved to investigate and to look into why things happen. There's usually a reason or a cause of why something happens. It just doesn't happen. Even accidents, driving, you have an accident driving because of some kind of failure mode that has happened. Either you're not paying attention, somebody else isn't paying attention, or there's the road, there's something wrong on the road or whatever that causes the accident to happen. The same thing in the hospital. When something happens to a patient, you like a fall, you look into it. There's usually a reason why a patient has fallen. Either they got up out of bed because they had to go to the bathroom because nobody rounded on them and offered to take them to the bathroom. Or the patient's confused and disoriented and didn't have a bed alarm set on them. So they get up, nobody knows that they're up, and so then they fall. And so I've always loved looking into the reasons why things happen and trying to prevent them from happening again.
Great. So we keep using the term rounding. And I think it's worth a mention because we're all using it the last, 2 months, going into our third month now. I'll bounce it to one of you who wants to pick up what's rounding, what that really means, and then are there different types of rounding?
Yep, sure. So rounding, and that is one of those terms I think we can throw out there without realizing that maybe people can pick up what we're talking about by context, but maybe not. But rounding is simply the idea that you would go visit patients, have a conversation with them. And so there are different types of rounding. So, for example, doctors go on rounds. A lot of times in the, typically it's something that you think happens in the morning, but at Mercy, doctors round throughout the day. We have hospitalists who are on site. They are medical doctors that are based in the hospital, and they round or visit their patients throughout the day. So different times of the day, they will come and check on patients and have status updates and see how they're doing. So that's one kind of rounding. Another kind of rounding that we started doing recently, well, we had been doing it for some time, but we expanded it recently, is leader rounding. So leader rounding is everyone from the CEO to the chief financial officer to even Lisa Platt here gets out from behind her desk and gets out there and rounds patients.
Out behind my desk.
So we have, imagine this, you have everybody from the director of human resources to the director of lab and imaging and mission services and communications, like I said, the CEO, the chief nursing officer, all of these people are going out rounding or visiting with patients on a daily basis, and then we have a weekly debrief. We'll be switching that actually to a daily debrief to come back together and then share what did you hear, what was going well, what isn't, what do we need to make changes about. So you have leader rounding. You also have nurse leaders who round. So the director, for example, of a medical unit or the clinical coordinators on the unit, sometimes the charge nurses. So they're asking some different questions that are probably more related to clinical care. But you have leaders rounding, you have nurse leaders rounding, you have the hospitalist rounding. So you have a lot of people that are on staff that are making sure that there are a lot of touch points with patients and families, a lot of opportunities for back and forth communication, a lot of listening going on. Matter of fact, we just recently added chairs to each room on hooks behind the doors that we put there for the physicians to sit at the bedside. So we really want them to take the time, take the chair off the hook, open it up at the bedside, sit down, have a conversation with the patient and the family members.
So Melissa, because you're part of the management team, you're rounding. Are you finding things that when non-clinical and clinical leaders are rounding that come to your attention?
Well, I think it makes it easier for the patients to voice little concerns that they may have that we may find to be not that important, but are important to them. Simply like a blind that's broken, the sunlight coming in and bothering them and getting it immediately fixed with that rounding. Makes the patients much happier because now I don't have the sunlight blinding me in the eye, and it's been fixed in 20 minutes. Somebody came up and fixed it, where before nobody was asking that question, how are things going? Do you have any concerns? Is there anything I can do for you? I'm a non-medical person. I'm not the nurse taking care of you. So they're more apt to have that conversation. Well, this blind is broken. Is there any way to get this fixed? And then it gets fixed. You come back the next day and they're like, wow, somebody came in 20 minutes and fixed this blind. It's so great. I got a great night's rest. And then they start talking about other things. But it also helps the department leaders from other areas get an idea of what it's like to be on the floor and taking care of patients. People have their assumptions of what it's like to be a nurse or be a patient or what their load is like. And it kind of surprises a lot of people to learn how much work nurses have to do.
Well, I have to tell you, as a non-clinical leadership rounder, I'm having a blast. So I think it's not just that I'm getting to meet the patients, but I'm having fun with the staff because they know when I'm up there, because we got to make it very clear. When we're rounding, it's not about finding fault with the nurses and the CNAs or the doctors. It's about how we improve our service to the patients. And so it's been fun getting to know a lot of the employees. And I'm on surge peds, and I've got a lot of fun having up there with those folks. So if you come when it's my time to round, you're going to have a lot of fun because that's what I think. You got to make people happy, right? Is that right, Kathleen? Yes. Well, she's nodding her head. So, hey, Bob, I want to know how we capture patient experience and how we measure it.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I think when you ask a question like that, the first thing people think of is surveys. And that is one way. But really, I want to back up because the rounding we're doing is capturing how we're doing. So if you go into the room, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this. You go into a room, you get feedback, which honestly, the overwhelming majority of the time is positive. But you're also going to hear things that it's great to get survey results, and we look at those very closely. Like I tell people, that's our blood work. The problem with the survey is you go home, you get the survey. By the time we get the results, it could be 2 weeks, it could be 2 months later, and it can be pretty broad, and it's hard for us to know. For example, it may ask about how often a nurse explained things in a way you could understand, and the answer is usually, well, I don't know which nurse, and I don't know what we didn't explain and where we missed the mark. But if we go into the room and we say, do you understand your plan of care? Have we explained that? Can you tell me what your plan of care is? Have they talked to you about when you're going home, when you will be discharged? What can you tell me anything about the medications they've given you and what they've done in terms of side effects and explaining those to you? Did they give you a medication sheet that showed you those things in print? We can tell how consistently we're doing things. So the surveys do come after that. There's the HCAHPS survey, which is the mother of all surveys. Every hospital has to give the HCAHPS survey, and then we're compared to each other. So it's really kind of a even playing field, and you can tell how you're doing, but that's really after the fact. It's kind of a downstream thing.
I want to come back to the HCAHPS, but Bob, you took us right into the second break. You're listening to Talking Health, the local talk at 4, brought to you by CHI Mercy Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We are back with Talking Health, and our guest, if you're just tuning in, is Mr. Bob Dunas, who is the Service Excellence Coordinator for Patient Experience, and Melissa Bergstrand, who is the Risk Manager at CHI Mercy Health. So, Bob, you threw a term out there towards the end of that last break, HCAHPS. You want to tell folks what HCAHPS stand for? Because we talk in a lot of acronyms.
Yep. So HCAHPS, like I said, it's the mother of all surveys. So it's HCAHPS. And that stands for Hospital Consumer, which is the patient assessment, which is a fancy word for survey of healthcare providers and systems, which is us and how we do what we do. And it is a survey that is mandated by government, Medicare and Medicaid. And like I said, virtually every hospital has to give this specific survey. I believe it's 25 questions. It's quite brief. Your care from doctors, your care from nurses, how quiet we were, how clean we were, our medication explanations. Did we give you discharge instructions? Did you understand? It's very basic. And it was put together by patients, by real patients, by a research organization, and designed in such a way that they found that places who have better outcomes on the survey have better clinical outcomes. People get healthier quicker, people get healthier faster, are able to go home sooner, fewer complications, better outcome for everybody.
So, Bob, let's make sure we're really clear about with rounding. It's not just about the things that we may need improvement on, but it's about those things that we are doing well and hopefully recognizing employees. Is that correct?
Great point. Yeah, obviously a lot of what we do is harvest recognition or kudos for staff, because I think one of the fun things about rounding is letting patients know that's part of our job. We get to hear the good stuff, and the more detail, the better, because then we can share that with staff, and staff love to hear that. I mean, like Mark Twain said, I could run on a month with a good compliment. So we really like to hear those back from patients, and sometimes they're over the top, wonderful, spectacular, and sometimes I think even just a regular regular compliment, but I rounded on a patient the other day. Patient and his wife were in the room, and he had just received a tough diagnosis. It was not going to be easy going from here on out. But he talked glowingly about a nurse who was new to us, new to Oregon, and he said he just did a phenomenal job of just having conversations with me when he had a chance to come in and sharing that he was new, and he wanted to know where he should go visit. And the patient was a native Oregonian, and so he said telling him about Crater Lake and the coast and going here and there just took my mind off of what was going on in my life. And he said he so appreciated that this new guy to us was compassionate and kind, and they both enjoyed that interaction so much.
Terrific.
So that was great to hear.
Melissa, you have any one patient experience rounding that stood out for you?
Oh, I don't know. I round on the surgical floor also, and I deal more with the pediatrics. And in general, most of the people that I have rounded on have expressed how much they really enjoy the nurses on the pediatric unit, how well-informed they are and can educate them on the things that are going wrong with their kids, and they can understand what's going on, and they feel supported by the staff. It's just an overall general repeated comment that I get for the pediatric side of the surgical unit.
Great. Yeah, I think for me, it's when the family's in there and you get to hear the good kudos on the staff that has come around and been with the patient, and how the family interprets that, because they're putting their loved one there and they want to make sure they're being cared for. So that's one of my favorite parts, is talking to the family. I want to get back to this survey a little bit, Bob, because I think we all, every time we get an email or a phone call or something that says, can you have like, you know, a couple of minutes to do a survey. I want to know kind of what's the experience with that, and are you getting a good response from phone, from email? You know, talk to us about that survey process.
So you have to be in a hospital one night. You have to spend at least one night. You have to be over 18 to receive the survey, and it is administered by a company that we hire. Most hospitals do it this way. The company we use is Press Ganey. They survey for 70% of the hospitals nationwide, so they're a big outfit. And we do it via mail. They send them out via mail, email, or text. So you can get it in one of three ways. And then those survey results go back to them, and then they send us the information. And like I said, we look at this really closely. It's not the be-all, end-all, because we certainly want to listen to patient comments also when they're in the moment, because by rounding and getting that feedback, we can take immediate action, whereas the survey takes, it's just a bigger lag time, and it takes us longer to respond. But At the same time, we know that patients may not say something to us in person, but they may share things on the survey, either by the answers they select or by comments they add to the survey, that they felt a little bit uncomfortable maybe saying while they were with us. So we look at those in a really different light, to the extent that they may be an accurate portrayal of who we are. And they are still overwhelmingly positive, either very positive or you did pretty good. And the pretty good ones are the ones we want to understand where they're coming from and what do we do to make it excellent. Because a lot of times people say, everything was fine. We had a good experience. I don't want fine or good. I want excellent.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask you both the question from your disciplines. So, what is the patient's role in patient safety?
The patient's role,
yeah.
To participate in their care and to communicate with their nurse and caregivers of what their needs are so that it can be provided in the safest manner. It doesn't mean that they have to agree with what a doctor has recommended. They have that right to have an opinion, but they have to work with us so that we can provide safe care for them.
And the reason I ask that question of you is because Kathleen and I worked very hard years ago to be advocates for health literacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that patients can advocate for themselves and get involved in their care.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for you, Mr. Bob, what's the patient's role in their patient experience?
I think it's to ask good questions. I think it's to, at the same time, listen to what the staff have to say. You have staff that are very experienced. They know how things work. And I think, for example, it's not uncommon for a person who's laying in the bed medicated to feel pretty good, and they don't understand why they can't just get up and go to the bathroom on their own. Yet the nurses know what effect that medication has on you, and although they've explained it to you, you may be a little bit medicated to the point that you just don't remember things. And so they're saying, for your own safety, just push the call light. If you need us, we will be here. We will help you up. And even if we just kind of stand by you and make sure that you're not going to fall over, it's going to be way better than if you do happen to fall, because you just thought you could do it on your own, but you're not at home. You might feel a little bit, like I said, medicated and still recovering from whatever you came in with. So listen to the staff. They are very experienced, very knowledgeable. We do know how to keep you safe.
And one other question, and again, I'm asking you from your perspectives now, from a rounding perspective, but why is the human connection so important when we're rounding on a patient, Melissa?
Part of that is because it reminds them that they're a person, and it reminds us that they're people too, and that they have feelings. It's not just a job to be doing a task. We're taking care of a whole person, not just a sickness or an illness or an injury. We're taking care of a whole person.
Mr. Bob?
I think what it makes me think of is the Patch Adams quote, and I think it was something like, you treat a disease, you win, you lose. Because we can't cure every disease. We're not going to save every life. But if you treat a person, I guarantee you, you'll win every time. So the human connection is about heart to heart. And we had new employee orientation today, and I made the distinction of the difference between working on an automobile, on an engine, replacing parts, or working with a human being. So you're talking about heart, soul, feelings, emotions, hopes, a future, dreams, and it's so much more important that you connect on a human level and that you're thinking about what does this person need from me in terms of reassurance and how do I instill trust in them. For example, we do a process called bedside shift report. So typically in the morning between about 6:45 and 7:15, you have a nurse who's been there all night for 12 hours. She's going home, and you have a new nurse coming on. So instead of them sharing information about the condition, the situation of the patient out in the hallway, or at the nurse's station. We ask them to have this conversation at the bedside. The patient is definitely expected to participate in that conversation.
Bob, we're going to have to take our last break, so stay tuned. You've been listening to Talking Health on 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We are back with Talking Health, and if you've just joined us, I'm sorry you've missed a great conversation with Melissa Bergstrand from Risk Management and Bob Dunas from Patient Experience. And Bob, you were sharing with us about the bedside shift report.
I think I had explained that the shift report takes place when the new nurse is coming on and the nurse who's been on duty is going home. And the nurse on duty gives the information to the new nurse at the bedside, including the patient and family member if they're there and the patient wants them to be included. So what's going on, last night, what happened, what's going on, what's the plan for today, medications, tests, procedures. So the patient can just listen and make sure it's accurate. They can interject. They can ask questions for clarification. So you can see this is a great teamwork and communication opportunity. And you get introduced to the new nurse and you have some confidence. You kind of just know them right off the bat. And you combine that with the hourly rounding and the leader rounding and the nurse leader rounding, and you have a lot of communication going on, so the patients and the families are well informed where we're at, what we're trying to do, how we're planning to get there.
And Bob, even on those negative experiences, what do we do? How do we address that?
So it can be best handled if it's in the moment. So for example, I'm rounding, a patient says, hey, the shower head isn't working like it should. When I leave the room, I immediately call facilities, and typically they send somebody up. They're there in 15 minutes, and they fix the shower head. Matter of fact, that happened with a patient recently, and they said they went from feeling like they were in Motel 6 to the Hilton. Oh. So it just changed it like that. So whenever we can, we address things in the moment. Occasionally, it's something a little bit more involved, and I'll send off emails, make phone calls to other department heads. If something happened in the emergency room, for example, the patient got admitted, everything was great. I had an experience in the emergency room that wasn't so good, and it may involve nursing staff. I will contact the director there. A lot of times he'll come right up and talk to the patient, get the details so we can go back to his department and take care of business. If it's more than that and it needs to go further, then we can involve the patient advocate. So she'll come up to the room, again, get the details, convene a meeting, whatever has to happen so we address the issue. Could be a process issue, miscommunication, whatever the case may be. So as much as possible, we want to take care of it while the patient's there.
Okay. Well, Melissa, what are some closing thoughts you'd like to leave with our listening audience today about patient safety?
One of the things I'd like to encourage patients at home, even before they come to the hospital, it's really important for their safety to have an updated medication list. Have it in your purse or your wallet. Keep a copy hung on your refrigerator. If you have an advance directive or a pulsed form, have a copy of that hanging on your refrigerator, because that's where EMS looks for those items, is on the refrigerator. Those simple things really help us provide the care that you want, because we don't want to be doing life-sustaining techniques to someone who doesn't want to be resuscitated. Medication lists, those are really important, because there's medications that you can't miss. And if we don't get that updated medication list and there's nobody with them that knows their medication, we can have a situation where they can go through some withdrawals or something from medications that are missed for a couple of days. So it's for the patient's safety to start there. And then when they come into the hospital, if they have a concern, family members or the patient, if they have a concern about something, ask the question, say, hey, is this what this is supposed to be? I don't understand this. Can you explain this to me? We don't want people stewing and worrying about something they don't need to worry about, because that increases their anxiety. They need to feel comfortable to talk with their nursing staff. If there's issues with the staff, to feel comfortable to say, hey, I'd like to talk to the charge nurse, so that the charge nurse can resolve the issue while they're there. We don't want them having a bad stay and go home and then think about it and get even more upset or disappointed about their stay because it wasn't resolved. We want things taken care of at the moment. If a patient is a high fall risk and the family knows it, but they don't appear to be a high fall risk to us, we want them to speak up and say, hey, they say they can walk, but they really can't walk. You got to watch this person. Then we can put those safety measures in place before they fall and get hurt, not have them fall and go, oh, well, yeah, they're a fall hazard. Well, nobody told us that. Because, you know, family's important too. But communication is the biggest thing, is to feel comfortable to communicate.
Terrific. Bob, briefly, what are some lasting thoughts, briefly?
I think for us, it's we strive to treat every patient like it were a family member. I have a family member, a close family member, that's in the hospital right now. And I hope that they get great care and have a great experience. And I want that not just for them, but I want everybody, somebody's mom or brother or son. And I want the same experience for them that I want for my family members.
Okay, terrific. Well, I want to thank you both today. Melissa, you made it through. Yay, Bob, you found your way here. We appreciate it. Please remember to tune in next week. We will be on physical therapy and nutrition. If you would like to contact my pal over here, Kathleen Nickel, please feel free to email her at mercycommunityrelations@chiwest.com, or she loves those Facebook messages. So give her a Facebook message and tell her you've got a future topic for us. Talking Health is brought to you by CHI Mercy Health, and we are pleased to sponsor this here on KQEN Local Talk at 4. So on behalf of Mercy Medical Center, please, please remember to be kind to one another, eat healthy, exercise when you can, and have a happy, healthy week.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.